Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Normally on the Friday of the bank holiday, we are in bloom with Funny Friday. We did it for a long number of years, and then obviously it stopped during COVID. And then for various reasons, we haven't been back. And one of the reasons is, I think when we started, it was a tenner in, which is modest enough, and the parking was free. Now it's 30 quid in, and the parking is 10 euro. So that's 40 quid if you arrive by car. I know you can arrive by bus as well. It was 30 quid in, and then somebody told us it's 45 euro for a two-course meal. So the only people who could afford to go to Bloom these days are RTE presenters. It's very high prices. 30 euro into Bloom, 10 euro for parking, and 45 euro for a two-course. I don't know how much a drink is, or a Club Orange with the bits, with the thing in it. I don't know how much that is, but that's one of the reasons why we're not there. But we will be, because we try and keep Funny Friday free. God knows you give enough money to RTE. We can't keep Funny Friday free, and that's why Funny Friday will be free again on August 2 in the Dolman Hotel in Carlow. All welcome. Now, a great example of people pulling together in the true metal sense of Irish community, it will be told to us now by Carmel O'Gorman, who's contacted us. Carmel, it's a very unusual story. Tell us how you first came across it. It's almost a movie script, unfortunately.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe. I first saw a post coming up on Facebook on the 6th of January of this year.
Okay.
It was the kindness crew, the soup run in Cork City, that headed up. And they were worried about Keane because he had left Cork City that night on a bus.
Yeah.
So they knew that she travelled to Mitchelstown.
This is a young man. Sorry, just the phone's a bit fussy. Yeah. This is a young man called Keane. He's 30 years of age, and he decided for whatever reason to head off from Cork City. Not into the wilderness, but off into the woods near the Galtee Mountains. And he was homeless at the time, and people were worried for his safety. So people were asking, could you go and look for Keane? Is that it?
Yeah, we've done a couple of searches in Bantry Woods, because we got a lead that he was seen in Bantry, but unfortunately it wasn't him. So we spent 2 days searching the woods in Bantry. But on the 14th of January, you know, I got a call here from a lady saying that she had seen his tint up Cooper's Wood.
Okay, Carmel, I'm going to halt you there. Quickly try and address that phone line, because it's such an important, one, an important story, and two, an uplifting story. That'd be really important to try and get a better line. By the way, just an update on the family who contacted Jesse Noel Hayes. On behalf of one of the families of the girls, the sixth class girls featured in a photograph in front of the Irish Times. We were talking to the families again today. They are still very upset, still determined to pursue and to find out who gave permission for the photographs of the girls in distress to be used on the front page of the Irish Times. We were on to Sportsfile, who took the photograph. They say permission is assumed because it was an FAI event. So the FAI gave permission. And we've been on to the Irish Times to ask them what their thinking was, or do they stand over it, or whatever. I presume they do, and they haven't replied. But we're talking to Carmel O'Gorman, and she's talking about a young man called Keane. We have his full name, and he was homeless in Cork, and at the beginning of this year, on that auspicious day, January the 6th, which will, for various reasons, especially in the United States, goes into the history books. On January the 6th, Keane told his pals that he was, by the way, Keane is 30. Keane told his pals that he was heading towards the Galtee Mountains, and his intentions were different, to say the least. Carmel, you can continue.
Yep. So I got the phone call here in my home to say that she that his tint was after being seen in Cooper's Woods.
Okay.
So myself and John and two more friends, Maeve and Joe, we went out and went up Cooper's Woods.
Okay.
And we located his tint.
Yeah.
So it took us a while to talk him around.
Just bring us back, Carmen. How long do you reckon Keane had been? And he deliberately wanted to get lost. Isn't that correct? How long had he been lost in Cooper's Wood?
Oh, he was in there 7 days, Joe.
Okay. And had he any food with him?
No, he had given up eating about four weeks before that even.
Oh, the poor man.
Yeah.
Okay, so well done. You went searching and you found the tent. Was it hard to find?
It was, yeah. He was in a secluded area.
Yeah.
In amongst trees across a small river.
Wow. And do you and your friends know Cooper's Wood, is that?
Two of the people that came with me and John, they knew the area.
Brilliant.
Myself and John wouldn't have known the area.
Yeah. So you gathered up two locals and said, do you know the wood? Where would someone go if they wanted to hide? He's not hiding from anything, by the way. But if they wanted not to be found, so to speak. So you found the tent, and the tent was pitched, and was Keane there?
Oh God, he was. He was in the tent. Maeve and Joe approached the tent first, and Maeve had brought a flask of hot chocolate because we had been told that she loved hot chocolate.
Well done.
But he refused to come out at the start, but he eventually said he would come out and get help.
And how was he, Carmel?
Oh, he was very weak, Joe.
Yeah. And was there any signs of, had he lit a fire or had he a little kettle or a primus or anything?
No, nothing, only his two sleeping bags and a blanket.
And had he got what? You reckon he was there, 3 weeks?
No, he was in the woods for 7 days.
Okay.
Sorry, 7 days.
But there was no evidence of any food.
Oh God, no. He hadn't eaten solids with 5 weeks before
that. That's what I mean.
Before he went to the woods.
So how did he look?
Oh, he was very weak and disorientated. He practically knew himself that he only had another day or two to live because he had stopped taking in water as well.
The poor man. And what did you say to him, Carmel, to persuade him?
Because Maeve really just done all the talking to him, you know. She told him that we all cared about him and that there were so many people out searching for him and that he had a future. He just kept saying to us, like, you know, I don't think I have a future.
Yeah.
I have fell through all the cracks in the Irish system. Nobody loves me. Nobody wants me. And eventually we got him to accept help.
And you persuaded him to come back?
We persuaded him to come out of the tent and that we'd get help for him.
Well done. And was he able to walk?
No, he had to be carried from the tent.
And who went? So you called the emergency services, is that it?
Yeah, we had contacted the Gardaí in care before we went up
the
woods because we knew we wouldn't be able to get reception up there.
Yeah.
So just as we had Keane out of the tent, the Gardaí arrived.
Brilliant.
So they brought him to a hospital to get help.
Okay. And Keane was in hospital for 3 weeks and you and your family have struck up a relationship with him.
We did. We struck up a great relationship with him. We went to the hospital every second day to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that struck us was, you know, that he was so grateful because he said to us on the first night that we visited him, he said, I've been in hospital several times and nobody ever came to see me.
Oh, God. By the way, Carmel, I meant to say to you, he took off on this trek on January, in the middle of winter.
Yeah, and it was coming up to the week that we had the very bad frost. Yeah. You know, if he had been in the tent for another night or two, he wouldn't have survived.
Okay. So you got him safely to hospital and then you start visiting him in hospital.
Yeah, that's right.
And what did you, I don't want his full name at this stage, but what did you find out about Keane and how he ended up in this dark place?
Well, we asked him his story. Plus, yeah. Joe, there was a documentary on Virgin Media last year and Keane was featured on it.
Okay.
And he told his story on that programme on Virgin Media.
And what was that story on Virgin? What was that about? What was that programme about?
It was about the homeless in Dublin.
Okay. And Keane was talking about being homeless.
Yes, he was talking about being homeless. And at the time that programme was made, he was working in a construction site. Okay. So he would sleep his bench every morning at 6:30, roll up his sleeping bag and go to work on a construction site and come back to his bench again that night.
He was homeless.
He was homeless, yeah, but he was still kept on his job in construction.
Okay, so your family are going up to visit him every second day in hospital in Cork?
No, that was in Kilkenny, Joe.
In Kilkenny, sorry. So you're going, it was great, you're going up to visit. And then by the time Keane was to be discharged, what happened next?
Well, myself and my husband decided that he deserved a chance, Joe, so we took him into our home.
Well done. Okay.
And I must say he was a pleasure to have.
And how was he after he left hospital?
He was his strength was after building up,
right.
And he was in good spirits, but he still couldn't believe that he had got such help, because he said he said people came into his life down through the years, but they never really stuck by him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was like a dream to him that we were still willing to help him.
Yeah. And how long did he stay in your house?
He was with us for five weeks.
Yeah. And who else is in? Have you children, Carmel and John?
I have five grown-up children, so they were all gone from home, Joe.
Okay. But still, they must have had an opinion about what Mammy and Daddy were doing.
Yeah, well, they were a bit sceptical at the start, but when they came and met Keane, then they knew that he was a genuine lad that just needed a bit of help and support.
Yeah. And I don't want a lot of information, but where was Keane originally from? Is he originally from Dublin?
No, he's from County Meath, originally from County Meath.
County Meath, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where is Keane now?
Keane is in Sligo now. While he was with us,
okay.
friends of mine in the Kilbinney Community Centre set up a GoFund for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they found this derelict cottage in Sligo and they purchased it for him. We couldn't find any place down here for the amount of money that we had raised at the time.
Okay. So,
this
is amazing.
So they came across this one in Sligo.
And what, the Kilbeheny community, which is in Cork, isn't it?
Well, it's on the Limerick border.
I better not get mixed up. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But it's in that general area. But they came up with money specifically for Keane, and they looked for somewhere for him to live, and they bought this cottage in Sligo for 41,000.
Yeah, that's right.
And what was the plan?
Well, the plan was that we'd raise enough money and he could put in for a derelict grant for us.
Okay, yeah.
But unfortunately, what we didn't realise, Joe, is that with these grants, you have to have the work done first before they give you the money.
Are you serious?
Yeah. You have to come up with the money and do all the work first before they'll give you any money.
But is Keane in the cottage in Sligo as we speak?
He's up and down to us during the day, but he's staying in B&B nearby.
Okay, have you seen it, Carmel?
I've seen pictures of it, but myself and John are going up now in a week's time.
Well done. And does it? Will it suit him? Is he happy with it? With it? If it's renovated?
Yes. He seems to be happy, and he's looking forward to doing a lot of the work himself.
Of course, because he's from the construction industry. That was his background before he was homeless. Yes. And when he was living in your house recently, for the 5 weeks or so. Prior to that, you mentioned he was in a documentary a year ago in Bergen, so he had been homeless for a good while. How did he manage living in your house? Did he get used to it?
Yeah, he adapted pretty well, Joe. I suppose it was tough for him for the first couple of days, because it must be very hard to adapt to living in a house when you were used to being on the street for so long.
Yeah. Just a free. I know the downside. The millions of downsides, but one of the other things people have said, well, I like to move at my own time and my own pace, and so there might have been difficult challenges for him living in a house.
Oh, there definitely was challenges, yeah, but in fairness to him now, he's settled great here.
Okay. And is he keen, pardon the pun, is he keen to make a go of it in Sligo?
Oh, God, he is, yeah, he is.
Okay.
He's talking to him for the 5 weeks that he was here, he just said that he wanted a simple life, a roof over his head, water and shelter. That's all he was asking out of life.
Okay. So what is, I know you're looking for help with trying to do up the cottage, given that you can't, I didn't know you can't get these government grants until you actually spend the money. I don't know where you get the money in the first place. What part of Sligo is he in?
I think he's about 20 kilometres from Sligo.
From the city as such, yeah. Sligo
from
town.
The city, yeah.
It should be a city, Sligo town. I know Kilbeny all got together on the Limerick border, and they raised the money specifically for Keane.
Specifically for Kenya.
Yeah.
And the response was unreal, Joe. There was donations coming in from outside the country even.
So you contacted us, you're looking for help, more help.
Yes, because the renovations are going to cost us more than what we have left now in the GoFund, because between solicitor's fees and stamp duty and buying the cottage and... there's no electricity in the cottage, so they had to pay $3,500 in to get that connected. But they've been told he'll be waiting about 12 weeks to get the electricity turned on.
Oh, God. That's a long time. That's 3 months.
Yeah, so we're facing a lot of stumbling blocks, really.
And what is the biggest, the electricity? Is the house about livable in if we got electricity into it?
Well, if he had electricity, he'd be able to live in it. Yeah. He just have the basics.
Yeah. And I presume it's who puts in the electricity? Is it ESB networks or Air Grid or whatever?
Yes.
And that's 3,500.
Yeah.
And it's not because he's so far away from the main road, is it?
No, there's a pole on the land. So I think it's that price for everyone to get connected, Joe.
Okay. Now, I'm just very conscious that the ESB, especially during COVID, well, always, but I know, anyway, the ESB, especially during COVID, were very good in that they said nobody, under any circumstances, will have their electricity cut off, regardless of their circumstances, which is a great reassurance. And I don't know if they have... I have a vague memory, going back to Paddy Moriarty's day in the ESB, I have a vague memory that they had a hardship fund. I don't know where it was, money donated by the staff in the ESB who were great, that would help out people in difficulty. But anyway, we'll try and find out. So we need to get the electricity in.
That would be the main thing.
To connect it, okay. Will you give us, obviously you're not going to set up another, give us the details of the GoFundMe page then.
When you go in, you're going to Building Keane's Future Home.
Okay, Building Keane, C-I-A-N.
Yeah.
Go into GoFundMe and go into Building Keane's Future Home.
Yeah.
It's lovely. And it's and many people between yourselves and the people who went out searching for Keane and found Keane and the Gardaí and include the hospital and then your family and then Kilbehany. How many people are involved in this community effort and the GoFundMe page?
Oh, there is about 10 of us involved.
Brilliant. And Carmel, have you ever done anything like this before?
I do a lot of volunteer work, helping people in the community.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. And how is Keane in himself now? First, how is his health?
His health seems to be good, Joe, he's in good spirits. And he keeps saying that he's really looking forward to having the house renovated. He can see himself, you know. I was laughing at him the other night. He says, I can see myself in about 3 years' time sitting on my chair watching TV in my forever home.
Okay. Carmel, you bring tears to my eyes. This is an incredible story. And how is he, Carmel, in himself?
He seems to be in good form, Joe. You know, for a man that has went through so much, you know, we're actually proud of him because I know if it was me, I don't think I'd even exist now.
And please God now. Please God, things will... Life has enough challenges for everybody. But the decade of the rosary that gathered around him to help him through yourselves and Kilbehany is just absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I'm not surprised when I asked you, I've done this. I do similar stuff in terms of trying to help people. So the GoFundMe page is Building Keane's Future Home.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the other thing, I presume you're looking for builders.
Yeah, exactly, because they will have to be a building contractor coming to do the work because it has to be done. If he applies for the grant, it will have to be done by a registered builder.
Okay. So I just wonder, is there any builders in and around the Sligo area, 20 miles radius or so, who has done those... it's not the retrofit, it's the derelict building renovation, isn't it?
Yes, derelict building.
Is there anyone that knows the ins and outs of it? They can talk to you and Keane. Keane is an adult and sort out the details. It would be great, wouldn't it? And we're coming into in terms of building, we're coming into a good time of year. I have this image in my head of Keane on his own, standing at a bus stop at the beginning of this year, the beginning of January, fed up, feeling that there's no hope for him, getting on the bus with his tent and telling people whatever formative words you use, but I'm going and I mightn't be coming back. And he goes up into the Galtee Mountains and finds a secluded place and pitches his tent, and only for yourself and your Maeve and the John, your husband, and the four of you went up, and then the Gardaí arriving so quickly. You actually found his tent, which is really important, but you actually persuaded him. Keane, there is hope and there is people that will. And you stuck by him 3 weeks in hospital, going up to visit him on a regular basis. It's incredible. Carmel, you've told an incredible story about an incredible young man. And hopefully things will get, he will get on his feet, and hopefully the whole project will take off. William Britton is in Sligo from Sligo Wood Flooring. William, good afternoon.
How are you doing there, Joe?
You're listening to the story, which is, it's like something out of a movie, William. It's like the chap going off into the woods. But anyway, you do Sligo.
I only got the end of it there. Yeah. I was just coming in, so I didn't get the whole story, but it was it's great, you know, that he's getting going again in Sligo.
Right, well done. And would you be, with Sligo Wood Flooring, I think the answer is yes, and in fairness, that's why you contacted us, so I really appreciate it. Would Sligo Wood Flooring be happy, would you have a look at the cottage for us and
I would
see,
indeed, yeah,
see so. What you could do?
Yeah, if he gives me a shout, we'll sort the floors for him.
Okay, we'll do it. The contact we have is you'll sort the floors. Well done. How big is the cottage, Carmel, do we know?
Just three small rooms in it, really, Joe.
Okay. Well, that's a start, isn't it? William Britton from Sligo Wood Flooring is saying he'll do the floors. Oh, I don't know what the ground is like under the floors, William. Apparently, 65 square metres, William. Is that big?
No, well, that's all right, wee size. But I know, it'll be grand. We'll get out. Sure, if he contacts us, we'll run out and myself and Alan will go out and have a look at it and sort it out for him.
Okay. And how long has Sligo Wood Flooring been going?
From 98. So
How many of you are there?
And there are seven of us here. Right, so.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And then he hopes to get this derelict buildings grant, but you have to have the work done. So anyway, but that's something you can chat about that with Carmel. Carmel is the contact person, and they're doing their absolute utmost. So William, that's a very good start. Really appreciate it, William.
Really appreciate it.
So we have the floor, Carmel.
We
have a floor, which is great. Three rooms floored, as William said. Hopefully the ESB will contact us if they have a hardship fund to help people like Keane, who's in that very, very unusual and difficult situation. But then the thing it threw up was the help of the people like yourself. And by the way, Carmel, up to the time you landed at that tent in the middle of nowhere, had you ever met Keane?
No, I'd never met him, man, Joe. No. There is another part to the story, actually.
Okay.
When he got off the bus in Mitchellstown on the Monday morning, he was walking out the road and Maeve, the other girl that came on the...
Yeah, the track with you, yeah.
She actually picked him up on the Monday morning.
Okay.
She says something just told her. She saw him walking out the main road from Mitchellstown to Kilbinnie. And she said normally she would never stop for men.
Yeah.
But she said something just told her I should stop for this guy. So she stopped and he asked her to bring him to the foot of the Geltie Mountains. Mm-hmm. Now, she thought it was very suspicious. And she spoke away to him on the journey out there. And she said to him, Keane, are you homeless by any chance?
Yeah.
And he said, no, not really. He said, I have options.
Okay. Well, he has options now, hasn't he, thanks to the kindness of strangers?
Yeah, he has a lot of options ahead now, thank God.
Yeah, okay. Well, we do our best. That was you did very well. That was a great. You told the story, and it as it is, and it's so moving. And there were people like William Britton from Sligo Wood Flooring coming on board so quickly. It's pardon the pun there, William coming on board so quickly, and that's a great start. Okay, thanks indeed, William Britton, and thanks indeed, Carmel O'Gorman, and lots of kind regards coming in. For Keane, people have this mental picture in their head of this 30-year-old, very young man, and trekking into the woods and then being found by this group of strangers who went looking for him, and then everything that took off after that. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Anya, good afternoon. This is a sad story. And the dog, your dog is called Daisy. Yeah. And what happened? What breed of dog?
Well, she's a Cavachon. So she's one of the little white fluffy dogs.
Okay.
A mixture of a Cavalier and a Bichon.
Okay.
And so she's just a lovely little pet dog, really. But what happened was about a month ago, we came down, just downstairs after the night and discovered that Daisy was, she had got sick. Now, the vomit that she had vomited up was actually a very strange colour. And she also was hemorrhaging from the back passage. So she was very listless. And so we decided we'd bring her into UCD. So during the weekend, they have an emergency pet hospital. And we brought her in there and they took her in. and they said that they'd have to keep her in overnight, mm-hmm. but that they were very concerned about her. So they kept her in, they ran a load of blood tests, and then they did ultrasounds and whatever, and they said that all of her insides were very inflamed,
okay.
and that all of her symptoms suggested that she had taken in something that was poisonous.
Mm.
So, anyway, she on the Monday then, they didn't have room in the main hospital for her. So on the Monday, they left the little cannula in her leg, and we brought her to our own vet. And she stayed for the day with them, and she was on intravenous drips. And she, again, all her blood, everything was shutting down. So basically her pancreas was totally inflamed. Her intestine was blocked up.
What was the cause of it?
Well, we knew that it was nothing here because in our own garden, I don't use pesticides or anything. I would be very much natural. So I knew that it wasn't something she picked up here. But what we discovered was that there was rat poison put down in an area that we walked her, a public park area.
Mm-hmm.
And we discovered that the residents around that park area had been notified to keep an eye on their dogs because there was rat poison had been spread. But there was no notice up for the public who walked mm-hmm. their dogs through this public area. And very often, so obviously she was on lead the whole time. We don't let her off lead when we bring her out. We just, because she's a big enough back garden to run around in. So basically she is on lead when we go out with her. So she was on the lead, but obviously came in contact with this poison that was put down.
Yeah.
And so the residents, I went to the Residents Association and I said how people had been contacted, you know, to be careful about the rat poison being laid. And I just said, you know, it would be good if notices were put up to alert the public, basically. But they thought she wouldn't make it. She actually stopped eating. She couldn't eat, and she was totally anemic. And
well, just to be clear on you for poor Daisy, the rat poison that was put down by the Residents Association or someone on their behalf was authorised.
Well, I don't know. I'm not accusing anyone of anything. All I do know is that one of the residents is a friend of mine. And she told me that a note went out from the Residents Association alerting them to the fact that rat poison had been put down. So be careful with that.
By who? But who put down the rat poison?
Well,
was it a council?
It would appear as if contractors were employed to put down the rat poison.
Did you see any signs saying?
No, there was no sign.
Be extra careful.
No, there was no sign, and the only way that I found out was that my friend found out that Daisy was ill, and she said how they had got this note in a bulletin from the Residents Association to say that to be careful with their dogs because rat poison was being spread. So I did speak to them, and I spoke to a man who was the husband of the person, And he said, I'll pass that on. But there is a rat problem in this Dublin area.
Yeah, there's
and,
a rat problem everywhere.
Yeah, but you don't... The reason I phoned was because I really don't know how we've managed to still have her. She's a very tiny little thing. And we prayed, and everyone prayed for her. And we have thanked God for the good vets. But she had to be rushed back into the main vet hospital after being with the vet every day. She had to be rushed back in because they just couldn't stabilize her, and they had to shave her tummy and do ultrasounds.
Yeah, I'll come back to that in a sec. But the Department of Agriculture have told us use in areas, including the setting of bait rat bait, obviously, in open areas can only be undertaken by registered professional users and are subject to strict conditions which mitigate the risk to non-target animals, i.e. dogs and cats or whatever. But there should have been, definitely should have been more signs up, and people, dog owners need to be extraordinarily careful. By the way, this is apropos something that came up here about a month ago on you.
Yes. Yes.
How much, and you said you had, she had to be rushed back in, her tummy, how much did all of this cost?
Oh, thousands, yeah.
What's thousands in real life, how much?
Well, it was, for the first night that she was in, it was over €1,000 for her to be in, getting blood tests. We have pet insurance, and they paid the... We had to pay
overnight.
We had to pay out €1,000, and we'll be getting 900 of that back. They also, on top of that, paid UCD directly, but it was our own vet's fees that we had to pay and claim back.
Yeah.
So our ones would be €1,000 plus another 500 for going forwards and backwards. So. I did contact the pet insurance, and I told them about, what had happened. And I said to them that I felt that they should kind of make investigations about the spreading of rat poison and about dogs being ill, because on a Facebook page, quite a number of dogs have been ill in the area.
But the insurance company says it's nothing to do with us.
No, but I think that if somebody has been irresponsible and in the way that they put down the poison, it obviously wasn't a little trap to trap the rat or whatever. In some way, it got into the ecosystem. And so if that was the case...
Well, maybe they put up signs that they were blown down or whatever.
No, there were no signs blown down.
Okay.
No, they're for definite. There was nothing. And the only reason I found out was my friend said to me, we got a little notice in.
Okay. Well, Daisy is okay, but you've spent nearly 1,500. Hopefully you get it back in insurance. €1,500.
Plus UCD have had, if it was €1,000 a day, she was in there for about 4 days.
Okay.
She was also down with our vet. But it was just, Joe, that because our animals are so precious to us, they're our family. I really feel that if residents in an area are given notice
that there's rat poison being
spread, then there should be a duty of care to put up a notice to the public who are free to use that public area to be careful of their dog. So I just didn't want this happening to anyone else because, do you know what, we went through a lot and she went through an awful lot. She really did. She suffered a lot.
But she's lucky to have you. Lucky to have you, Anya, and you're lucky to have her. I know that. Anya, thanks indeed. By the way, Bord B have been on about Bloom. It is 30 quid into Bloom. The parking is a tenner. They encourage public transportation, but they say since it started back at the heyday, the Celtic Tiger tickets have only gone up by €5. But it is €30 into Bloom and €10 for parking. Clarify that. Joe with RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Oh, unfortunately, 7 days and we haven't found the caravan. William Brown. William, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How's things?
Well, how are things with you, more importantly? Last Friday, you were on your caravan.
I'm very down, Joe. I lost my locket. Belonged to my mother with her ashes in it. I think it's in the caravan. I'm really sure it's in the caravan. And
Just to remind people, update people. This time last week, you contacted us because you had bought a little caravan. This is my description: two-wheel, Father Ted, small, lovely caravan. You paid just over €2,000 for it. You had parked it in just outside your house in Clondalkin. Is that right, Clondalkin? And the council gave you 24 hours notice, and they took it away. You don't know where it is, and you've now realised your mother's ashes after she was cremated is in that caravan.
That's right, yeah, and a locket, Joe.
Where is the caravan?
I don't know, I still don't know, Joe, because I have contacted the council every day since, and they said that they would get back to me, but they never did. Four phone calls now, Joe, and they never can't get back to me, so I don't know who.
Yeah, well, hang on. They move quick enough when they wanted to whip the caravan from in front of your
house. Joe, yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
I know they were legal. They said they were legally entitled, but it was.
Yeah.
Anyway, and have they said anything about money? You're going to have to pay money to get the caravan.
I don't even know where the caravan is, Joe. I don't know who took us.
I'm trying to remember the photograph of it. It's a clubman, isn't it? A clubman caravan.
The clubman, yes, clubman.
Two wheels. What colour is it?
It's a kind of a beigey colour.
Beigey. Okay. Have you any stickers on it? Anything that would identify it?
No, it's only beige and black, Joe. There's a few black spots on it. Covers of a battery and all that.
Would it be a reg number on the back of your car or anything? No.
No, my reg number was on it.
Okay.
But and leaving, but I don't think he'd be on it now, Joe. You know.
Okay.
Because I had lights, you know, for my trailer and my boat. Just keep on lights, you know.
And if I don't want any names now, given the elections next Friday.
Oh no, I know that, Joe.
Did any councillors come near you and say we'll give you a hand?
No, Joe. No, nothing from council. Nothing.
Well, did anyone knock on your door canvassing?
No, Joe.
Okay. The mystery for us as well is that we've been on to the council.
Yeah.
Unless you're David Copperfield, surely you can't, a magician, surely you can't make a caravan disappear.
No, unless they can.
Or Keith Barry or whatever, but you can't. Yeah. They're the only people I know who can make things disappear very convincingly. So we're looking for a beige caravan, a beige clubman caravan.
Clubman caravan, yeah.
With some black, is it black stripes or black spots?
No, the battery goes in and the toilet tank now goes in.
And then if, are the windows, is there curtains over the windows?
Oh, there's curtains over the windows, yeah.
Okay, but I'm just trying to, is it in a yard, is it in a garage somewhere that even if somebody in the garage could say, listen, we work for the council and it's parked here and we make sure nobody comes in and obviously robs it or whatever.
There is a padlock on the door, Joe.
There's a padlock? Okay, tell me about that.
A brand new padlock and bolt.
A brand new padlock. And bolt. Okay.
And bolt, yeah.
And how big is that? Is that the size of a cigarette box?
It'll be more bigger. It's a big speed
lock. Okay, that's what you want for it. So that's some identification. Yeah. We're looking for a two-wheeler clubman caravan. What year was it made? I know it's irrelevant in that sense, but what year was it built?
I think it's back in the 80s or not, the 90s, Joe, I think.
90s, okay. Okay. We're looking for a two-wheel caravan. Clubman is written on the front. It has a padlock, a brand new padlock, bigger than a cigarette box, on the door. So that's
right, yeah.
That will identify it. And if I look in the window, will I see anything?
No, because the windows are, you know, that's a thing, tinted for the mirror effect on them. You know what I mean?
Oh, the mirror effect, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we put out another plea, but 7 days we haven't found it, William.
That's right, Joe, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think we'd find Shergar quicker at this rate. And the council won't tell us where it is.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, are you sure, William, that the council took it?
Well, Joe, I got a letter from the council saying that...
we're going to take it.
I have one day to get rid of, to get, move the caravan. So in a matter of 14 hours, the caravan is gone. So to me, the council took it, you know what I mean? So,
but did anyone whip out... Did anyone see it being... anyone whip out their phone and take a footage of it?
I don't know, Joe.
No, okay. Okay. Any... I hope you're not giving up at this stage, are you?
Well, just about now, Joe. Like, I mean, just about. There's more stuff in the caravan as well. Belongs to me. Like, I mean, you know. So
yeah, I know. And it's, you know, well, your mother's ashes, and now you would have been on the road with it this weekend, wouldn't you? With the bank holiday.
I'm on 2 weeks holidays, Joe, now at the moment.
For God's sake.
Yeah. So. And.
Okay, and it's South Dublin County Council.
South Dublin County Council, yeah.
Okay.
I've actually been up there, Joe, and I've been into the section, and they told me the ring, it wouldn't let me any further, of course. But they told me the ring, and they said back onto us the following day, and they never did. We've been ringing ever since, every day we rang. See?
Okay. They said, you went up to the office, and they said, go home and ring us.
No, stay in the reception and ring the number that they gave us. It's the County Council number.
Yeah.
And we rang that, and a woman came on and said that after the ring back, she'd get in contact with somebody, that they're getting in contact with us.
Yeah.
So they never did. That's the same thing every day, Joe. We get them. It's like an automatic recording, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And when is the last time you were up at the council?
A couple of days, 3 or 4 days ago.
Okay, yeah. Now we're into the bank holiday weekend.
Yeah.
It's 20 to 3. Okay, we'll put out another. And you see, if there was no election on, I would shout out to a few councillors who normally from South Dublin County Council normally contact us and are brilliant, but I can't. Don't give up any names. I'll be here till Christmas reading out the 242 of the names.
There's a woman here from the Irish people give me a hand as well, but
okay, well, William, we'll keep on to the council. Don't get too cast down, will you? Because you have great plans, energy, and you want to I was just mentioning voting there, which is next Friday. I did not know until I heard Justice Marie Baker on, it was on News Talk actually the other morning. I didn't know, given the number of candidates next week, given the number of those European and local elections and a Limerick and Maryland election, given the number of ballot papers you're going to be handed, if you make a mistake on your ballot paper, in other words, I think one ballot paper has three similar surnames. If you put the number one beside the wrong surname, don't scratch it out. Don't try and, because you'd spoil it. What you can do is, according to the Commission on Demand, what you can do is, this is the Electoral Commission, sorry, the Commission on Demand is a media one. According to the Electoral Commission, you go back up with your ballot paper. Okay, you've made a mess of it. Okay, you go back with your ballot paper and you say to the person who gave you the ballot paper, I'm sorry, and you won't be the first, I'm sorry, I've made a mess of that. Here's that one back, can I have a fresh one? And you're entitled to get a fresh one. Did you know that? A lot of people didn't. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And a King the Crow was on there again, the ad for St. Anne's Park, and people were, especially in my own household, were saying, why haven't you mentioned Picture This? Ryan Hennessy and Jimmy Rainsford and the Boys, one of my favourite bands ever. But the reason I didn't mention Picture This is that they're sold out in St. Anne's Park tomorrow night, and they'll be brilliant, I'm sure, and I hope to get the weather. Okay, but Picture This are sold out. Okay, as far as I know. We were talking yesterday about D-Day, and we kind of fell on the question, who was the first Irish-born person who landed on the five beaches on D-Day? And David Duffy, who's big into this, he thinks it was Rod Taylor, the actor, who subsequently played in a movie based on D-Day. And Dan Harvey has contacted us. Dan, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. And Dan is a Lieutenant Colonel, retired. Tell us about the book you've written. That was Richard Todd, by the way. Sorry, my mistake. Tell us about the book you've written about D-Day and Irish connections.
Yeah, I wrote it 5 years ago for the 75th anniversary.
Brilliant.
It's called A Bloody Week, The Irish at D-Day, and it's published by Marion Press.
Oh, magnificent. So who do you feature?
Well, now...
Who do you not feel? Okay,
you pick
a few. Pick. Begin with Kay Summersby and Eisenhower.
Yes. Well, now here's the story that would only happen in reality. You couldn't make it up. Kay Summersby was Kathleen McCarthy Morrow, and she was from Inishbeg House in Baltimore in County Cork.
Okay.
And she had a privileged, happy childhood, one you'd associate more with the landed gentry.
Okay.
But the family were pure Irish.
All right.
Now, she was a noted beauty.
Yeah.
And in her late teens,
she
went to London and she became a fashion model for work. And that was the equivalent of becoming a supermodel.
Okay.
In due course, she married Gordon Thomas Summersby.
But
they divorced, but she kept her name.
Okay, Summersby, okay.
So war broke out.
Yeah.
And Kay joined what was called the Merchandise Transport Corps as a driver.
Okay.
And that involved her driving ambulances during the Blitz through rubble-strewn streets in blackout conditions, attending horrible scenes, injuries and fatalities.
All right.
In due course, though, she was assigned as a chauffeur to a U.S. general, General Dwight Eisenhower.
Wow.
Now, she had proved herself a good driver. She was attractive, she was friendly, she was sociable, she was accomplished, and she had Irish charm. And in the circumstances, a close wartime rapport developed, if you understand me. Now, she was engaged to a Major Richard Arnold, but he was killed mine-clearing in Tunisia in June 1943.
Okay.
So she kind of progressed from becoming his driver to becoming Eisenhower, otherwise known as Ike, his secretary. And a closeness developed.
Mm-hmm.
So she accompanied him wherever he went, and she was very discreet about it.
Okay, you call it diplomatically a CWTR, a close wartime rapport.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
A strong relationship was not in doubt. An affair was not clear cut.
Okay.
But it was generally assumed that that was the case.
And do Eisenhower's, which there have been legion, have Eisenhower's biographers acknowledged that? Now, I know they acknowledge the role that Kay played in terms of her soldierly life, but do they acknowledge that the two of them were in a relationship, so to speak?
She herself wrote two books.
Okay.
And the first one didn't give a whole lot of detail. The second one was more explicit. But he did seek advice of a friend. He had an eye to a political career after the war.
Yes.
And he wondered how would divorcing his wife and marrying Kay hamper his political career. And
okay.
he was told in no uncertain terms that it definitely would. So now he's faced with a choice, his career in politics or Kay.
Okay, so she wrote Kay Summersby from, give me the name of the townland again, from in Cork.
Baltimore, County Cork.
Okay. And is she still, Inishbeg, sorry, house. And has she still got relations down in that part of Cork?
The house has been sold now.
Okay.
And you can actually go there for a weekend. It's a lovely place to visit.
But are there any McCarthy Morrows still in Cork that would be related to Kay? We don't know, I suppose.
They're not in the same, if they are, they're not in the same situation,
okay,
shall we say.
Now, you say she wrote two books, Kay wrote two books. The first one didn't mention any relationship with Dwight Eisenhower. What was the second book?
Yeah, this was written a number of years later when the situation had sorted itself, if you like.
Okay.
So she was a bit more direct.
Yeah, what was that called?
Now, I'm not sure that this one, the second name.
Well, I can tell you because it just come up on my screen thanks to one of our listeners. The second one seems to be a little bit more explicit because it was called Past Forgetting, My Love Affair with Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Well, let the book say it.
Okay, but apparently my caller says it's explicit about there being a romance.
Yeah,
but as far as they can remember, there was no reference that they did the bold thing.
Yeah. Well, he did obviously have feelings for her because choose advice, but he chose politics over his affair. So he became a president of America twice, actually. He was a two-term American president.
Mm-hmm.
And Kay was given American citizenship and made an officer in the U.S. Army. And while there, she married for a second time. She married a man called Reginald Morgan, a stockbroker, but she was divorced years later. So she was unlucky in love, I'm afraid.
Okay, but she was very accomplished in her work life, obviously.
Absolutely.
Very accomplished woman, yeah. Okay, move on. I'm told I'm too prurient here. Richard Donovan.
Charlie Donovan.
Charlie, yeah.
Yes. Royal Navy from Ballymore Ferns in County Wexford.
Okay.
Now he was a former World War I submarine commander.
Yeah.
And he had spent the First World War fighting the Turks down the Dardanelles. But now he found himself with the prospect of D-Day. He found himself in Plans Division. And this was combined operations. It was set up specifically for the tactical and strategic planning of D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
So it became a distinct branch of the military.
Okay.
And he was just by way of it, he was retained after the war to write the history of combined operations. But the type of things that he would be concerning himself with would be once it was that they discovered that there was going to be the defences, the fortress, the Atlantic Wall that Rommel had presented along the northern coast of France. He engaged another Irishman, whose father was from Dublin and his mother from Tyrone, General Percy Hobart.
Okay.
And he was to come up with adapted vehicles to try to overcome the beach obstacles. And he engaged the help of another Irishman called Michael Morris. And he later became Lord Killala.
Ah, of course. The Olympics.
That's it. And he actually got an MBE for his efforts during the war. And curiously, so too did his wife.
And her name
was? Mary Sheila Cathcart Dunlop from Uachtaráin, County Galway. She got an MBE as well for her contribution towards breaking the famous Enigma Code.
Okay, and I know Lord Bernard Law Montgomery has, who was very instrumental in changing the number of beaches from 3 to 5 that they would try and land on. He's from Moville in County. He had deep relations or connections with Moville in County
Donegal.
Mm. Of course, Henry
Hobart's widowed sister Betty actually married Monty.
Ah.
There we are.
And Dan, there's, yesterday when we mentioned that Richard Todd may have been the first Irishman to land on D-Day, I'm just wondering, surely there must have been, and I'm just talking into the air here, I don't expect you to have an answer, but I'm just wondering, who was the first Irishman to land in France on D-Day? Maybe some of the parachutists.
I'll give you a choice of two now, Joe. You had the main body landing at 6 o'clock on D-Day, on dawn. But before that, on the night before, you sent in your paratroopers to secure your flanks left and right so that you won't be counterattacked or you'll hinder the counterattack when it comes. And they would do that by blowing bridges, seizing bridges, holding onto crossroads and hilltops.
Okay, so
on the left-hand side, you had the Americans went in, and in a heavy even of the paratroopers, in went the paratrooper pathfinders, and they would find and mark out the drop zones for paratroopers.
Okay, so there's every chance some other Irishman landed.
Absolutely. Stay with us, Dan,
because more people have contacted. I'll come back and hold on to that name. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Before I move on, and I'll come back to you in a sec, Dan, after that, but did Kay Summersby ever, did she ever get, I know you mentioned she was American citizenship and all, but did she ever get a medal for her bravery? Because she was a very, very brave soldier during the Second World War.
She got a number of decorations.
Brilliant.
But for service more so than, you know, bravery.
The individual acts.
She died of cancer, unfortunately, in Long Island in New York in January 75.
Okay.
I just want to go
to Peter Bourne. Peter, good afternoon. You want to remember Sergeant Pierce Ryan. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Pierce Ryan, Joe, was my first cousin. He was the first of 50 cousins born on my mother's side of the family. Pierce was born in 129 Cork Street early in 1924.
Okay.
Both his parents had been involved in the War of Independence. I think his father may have backed the wrong horse, taking the Republican side, and as a result, at the end of that war, there weren't too many jobs for the losers, and he emigrated to the United States, and 6 months later, his wife and Pierce followed him. So Pierce was reared in the United States.
Okay.
In 1944, he would have been 20. He had joined the American Army and was inducted into the elite Ranger Battalion, the 2nd Rangers, and as such found himself on D-Day with one of the toughest nuts to crack, which was the artillery batteries on Point de Hoc.
I know, well, now, yeah.
Point de Hoc was a headland that came out between Utah and Omaha beaches, and if these artillery pieces were not disabled, they could have absolutely devastated the landings on both beaches. These could send a 42-kilo shell 10 miles with great accuracy. So Pierce's unit were ordered to take this position and destroy the guns.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves scaling the cliffs at Point de Hoc. Now, the Germans, in unknowns to the Allied commanders, the Germans had withdrawn the artillery pieces because of aerial bombardment some weeks before.
Right.
And they were hidden in hedgerows nearby for rapid redeployment. But Pierce and his guys didn't know this, and they also didn't know that the artillery pieces had been replaced by a devastating weapon, the Mauser MG-42 machine gun, which was belt-fed. So when they landed on the beach, they were literally cut to pieces. He told me that of his company, only 7 out of 77 got off the beach unscathed.
Wow. Right?
And as the ramp hit the water, when they were landing, the guy beside him had his head blown clean off, and I thought that would shock him. But he said you couldn't even think about it. You couldn't think. You just had to carry on. And so they then, himself and his buddies, took cover behind the bodies. They were in the second wave, by the way, and that might have saved them a bit. So they took cover behind the bodies of some of the fallen from the first wave, and you could hear the bullets tutting into them, but they were safe. Eventually, Pierce was ordered up a ladder. They brought ropes and rockets to fire up onto the headland with grappling hooks, but the ropes had become wet and they were heavier than the planners had planned, and some of the rockets didn't reach their targets. But they did have ladders supplied by the London Fire Brigade,
yeah.
100 feet long ladders, and Pierce was going up one of those, fully certain that this was going to be his last day on Earth. He told me that as he went up, he was whispering an abridged act of contrition in his own ear. And I'm reminded of Robert Redford in A Bridge Too Far, crossing the Rhine, saying, "Hail Mary, Holy Mary, Hail Mary, Holy Mary." So this is...
incredible.
Pierce got to the top of the ladder, and he glanced across. There was a lull in the machine gun fire while the team were changing the ammo belts. And he caught a glimpse of one of his own comrades up another ladder on the left-hand side, approaching the machine gun position with a smoking bomb, a satchel bomb. And he had obviously pulled the pull switch and the fuse was lighting because it was smoking. And Pierce decided he'd keep his head below the cliff until he see how this guy got on. And the guy got on very well. He lobbed the bomb into the machine gun nest. And
it's an incredible story.
So he got blown to Kingdom Home. He said, after that, they all piled onto the top of the cliff, and he and his mate went around the back of a concrete bunker. They had three grenades, and he opened the door and threw in his grenade, steel door, wasn't locked, and the other guy threw in his two grenades. They heard the shout inside, "Achtung, Achtung, Achtung," and then boom, 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 the three grenades went off, and the position was there. But he said the Rangers really cut loose on that occasion because they shot everything that moved because they had seen their own mates blown to pieces down on the beach. Now, the worst part of it after the initial assault and that, he said, was the next 2 days, they weren't reinforced until the 8th of June. And troops from, I think it was the 16th Division Infantry, reinforced them. But in that time, the Germans were counterattacking and they were running perilously low on ammunition. They had no sleep, no food. And he thought that was actually the worst time. However, they did send out patrols, and their patrols found the artillery pieces, these 105mm cannons, and destroyed every one of them. So their mission was accomplished. They had cracked the nut on Hitler's
incredible.
Atlantic Wall.
Incredible story. Incredible. Pierce Ryan, born on 129, I don't even know, 129 Cork Street, is still there, Peter.
It's just barely there, Sean.
Okay?
Joe, there's an archway attached to it, and then there's new little flats adjoining it.
And people can read up. And just Google Point to Hawk, Point D-U-H-O-C. It is incredible. And Merriweather, I know this from my own interest, in Merriweather turntable ladders in London, they supplied the ladders and they bolted them onto landing craft to try and get them up that sheer cliff. That's an incredible achievement. Now, we will be coming back to this, so and I appreciate our other callers as well, and we will be coming back. That's Lieutenant Colonel Dan Harvey and Peter Bourne. Quickly, Darren Gallagher is at Ramines, building Keane's dream home. Darren, you have a television, you want a brand new television you want to give Keane.
Hiya, Joe. Yeah, Gallagher TV in Ramines. We do a bit of work in Donegal and Leitrim, and we're happy
brilliant.
To organise a TV for him. Yep.
Well done, Darren. Great Friday news. Where's John? John is in Athy in County Kildare. John, yes?
Joe, yeah, thank you, Joe. Joe, we'd like to offer that man and that lady as much paint as they need to complete that project, inside or out.
Okay.
Anything they need, just get in touch.
Well done, well done. And your company is called Monto Paint.
Yes, I know, Joe.
I know.
It's a bit like the song, but Monto Paint is called Pinturas Monto, which is Spanish for mountain paints, but
okay.
We're in 32 Duke Street in Athy.
Okay.
And we're only a new business, Joe.
Oh, well done, well done. And Paul is in Kilkenny. Just say hello, Paul. I just want to hear your voice because I know you say...
Hey, Joe, how's it going?
And well done, Paul. We're Lawrence Architectural Technology Services in South Kilkenny, and you or your team will be happy to pop up, have a look at the cottage. And remember, a lot of the people who organise this are from Kilkenny. pop up, have a look, and you're, as you say, you've a great phrase. I just like to pay something forward every now and again. Thanks, Paul. Architectural Technology Services, Lawrence Architectural Services in Kilkenny. Darren Gallagher and Gallagher TV in Rathmines, well done. And Monto Paint and also Sligo Wood Flooring from earlier on. That's a good start for the day that's in it. Have a good weekend. Mark McGrath on sound, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, series producer Annette Egan. And bye-bye, I know they're on a different station. Bye-bye on the day that's in it. And this is a sad day, I can tell you, across the station. Bye-bye, Darren. Great colleague. Bye-bye, Jennifer. Fantastic, fantastic future ahead of her, I think, on the airwaves. And the two Johnnies, bye-bye, and we love you. And Afric is moving on to the morning show, Afric O'Connell. And Jennifer Zamparelli is a good friend of mine, and I texted her when the news came up. And I, as I say, I think she has a great career ahead of her. Okay, Annette Egan is the series producer, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Revamp your home this May with our fresh new curtain embedding designs. Discover comfort and style for every room.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.